This is a Dreamcast disc and is for use only on a Dreamcast unit. Playing this disc on a hi-fi or other audio equipment can cause serious damage to its speakers.
Dreamcast, up to 6 billion players.
Welcome back to the stage of history.
Why don't we play together?
Hey, it's time to make some crazy money. Are you ready? Here we go!
Please stop this disc now.
Welcome to the future. This is the first DreamPod of 2017. Christmas has been and gone, New Year has been and gone, and we're back. My name is Tom. As I said, this is DreamPod episode 45. I'm joined by Mr. Rob Jones.
Hello, yay, 2017, woo!
Yay! And also by Mr. Mike Phelan.
Hello, I'm not cheering.
Come on, Mike, get excited.
No, I refuse to cheer.
Come on, after the misery of 2016, yeah. It was like a death march.
It was.
Those last couple of days were horrendous. Let's not dwell on the negative, though. Let's look to the future and the positive. It's a new year. Guys, did you have a good Christmas?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, it was a great Christmas. Primarily because I didn't, for once, like for the, this is like the first time in, I can't remember when, I didn't have to drive anywhere.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, no, all the relatives, if they came down, they came to me. I didn't have to go anywhere. So, yeah, I feel really, really sort of refreshed and relaxed because you know what it's like, modern day, like your family's like 3.5, maybe more hours away. And, you know, those trips can be quite tedious, specifically at Christmas. So, yeah, I feel good.
Excellent. What about you, Mike?
Yeah, I'm not really a big Christmas fan, Tom.
Why doesn't that surprise me?
No, it was all right. Yeah, it was a good Christmas. It is what it is. I work in retail, so unfortunately, my impression of Christmas is somewhat.
And the general public.
Yeah.
We hate them.
Yeah.
You know
enough
what?
Said, I think.
This country would be great if it wasn't for all the people.
Totally agree. Yeah, no, I know what you mean, Rob, with having to like travel around. Obviously, my family live miles away from where I live, so usually every year I go and see them, but this year I just thought, you know what, I'm not going to bother, so I didn't. And weirdly, nobody came to see me, so it was actually quite quiet, but it was good fun, got a lot of games in.
That
was a good thing.
Games time.
That brings us quite nicely to our first point that we always touch on. What have we been playing? What have we been purchasing? And modern or retro. Rob, I'm going to start with you. What have you been playing? Because you've not been on for a while.
No, I haven't. Before Christmas, I didn't really get time to play much because it all sort of like gets crunch time. Certainly in the tech journalism industry, like there's this massive crazy rush, you know, there's like, from Black Friday, you know, there's all the deals and all the sort of just craziness, like the amount of stuff people are buying. And then that sort of rolls into Christmas and there's like loads of Christmas gift guides and loads of stuff that needs to be done. So I didn't get too much time. I did play Dishonored 2 before Christmas, which is the sequel to Dishonored, which I really, really liked. It's sort of like a, I don't know how you describe it, like an action RPG stealth kill 'em up.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you played the old Thief series. It's like the old Thief or System Shock series. So there's sort of RPG elements to it and sort of how you build your character, but essentially you're sneaking around and horribly killing everybody. And that was great. Over Christmas, and I didn't see this coming at all. It was only because we got some review codes in before last year for Final Fantasy 15, which really, like, I played it because we identified it as like it's a game that's been like a decade in the making or something. It's Final Fantasy. It's a legendary series. It's had this massive lead time and it looked spectacular. So we thought we had to have a look at it, see if we wanted to put it in any of our gaming guides really for Christmas.
Yeah,
I checked it out and it got its hooks into me. Like I don't know how to really describe it. The one word I would say is, it is an epic game. Like if you like, it is the proper use of the word epic. I'm reminded of like classic ancient Greek style, like epics, like the Iliad, you know?
Or, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, it's men, it's gods, and there's magic, there's travel, it's like a voyage of discovery, it's like a coming of age story, there's mythical creatures, there's like, the protagonists, they have to overcome sort of like increasingly crazy odds. And it's really, really long because at its heart, it's a JRPG. And so there's a fair amount of grind in it. But oh my God, the content dump in that game is just astonishing. You can see where they spent those 10 years because there's just so much to do. It's so varied. And that really got its hooks into me. I could never get bored. If I got bored of one, I was sick of maybe the story quest, I can go and do some hunting. If I not had enough like hunting, I could go and find some treasure. If I didn't want to find treasure, I could take some photographs. If I didn't want to take photographs, I could race chocobos. Do you know what I mean? There was always something new to do. And despite the fact that the second half of that game falls away spectacularly, you go from this amazing open world, which is so rich and vibrant and full of like literally, you are essentially fighting a titan at one point. Like, it is insane. And it's suddenly back half of the game. I don't know if they run out of time or they run out of money or if it was a creative decision. They just sort of suddenly then funnel you in a corridor and that open world is stripped away and you're just sort of forced through a series of Dark Souls-style grindy boss fights. It's basically a boss rush to a degree. You just sort of...
That's a shame.
Which is a shame, but I've literally finished the game a couple of days ago. I beat the story and now I'm in post-game. And I've literally just unlocked a flying car, which is amazing. Anyway, enough about Final Fantasy. Sorry. So that's modern. In the past, what have I picked up? The big pickup I had before Christmas was I finally got a copy of Image Fighter X Multifly on the Saturn, which is a legendary title.
I've never heard of it. Sorry. What is that?
They're two obscure shmups from the 80s. That were combined into the two separate games that were combined onto one disc. But they're amazing shmups, side-scrolling, and in the R-Type mold, essentially. Yet they've got some... X-Multiply has some nice little neat mechanics where your ship essentially has two robotic arms. So imagine Dr. Robotnik with his robotic arms. Your ship's kind of got two of these, and the cool thing with them is while you don't have actual control over them independently, depending on how you move the ship affects how the arms move, and the arms are shields as well and will also destroy any other ships or enemies coming at you. So by manipulating these arms optimally, you can essentially create this little bubble of invincibility, essentially, where nothing can harm you. But obviously that's much harder than it's actually very hard to do in the game anyway. So yeah, that was my main pickup on the Dreamcast. I played a bit of MDK2. Love that old game from Shiny.
Nice.
Just I don't know. Like, it's one of those titles where they're sort of burnt in my mind from when I was younger. Just an outrageous style. Yeah, but it's a great game. It plays really quickly. Yeah, people know what MDK2 is. So I don't need to go into it.
I just remember it being really difficult.
Yeah.
Really difficult. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not saying I'm a master of it. It's just there's something about, for me, a lot of the time with video games, I find now it's just about the style, really. Like, every video game I play, I certainly do not complete. I make no pretense to being like a video game god.
Same, totally.
Totally. Mm-hmm. It's the same with I love my shmups, but I, for one, am not one of these 1cc guys who's like, oh yeah, like I 1cc this and I 1cc that. And, I can't do it. I'm not that skilled. I'm not saying those guys are pretentious or anything. I'm just saying I'm not that skilled to do it. But that doesn't mean I can't appreciate it and play the game. And it's that's one of the things with MDK. Oh, yeah. And last thing, because I know I'm taking up a load of time here. Started playing a load on the Neo Geo Pocket Color again, which I always come back to. It's just my favorite old pocket system. I mean, I'm not joking you. Like, I maybe we should... Well, this isn't the place to do it, really, but I would love to have some sort of debate on, like, what is the best, like, retro pocket system? Because, I mean, people talk about, like, the Game Boy and...
Game Boy Advance.
Micro. Exactly. I could fight all day for the Neo Geo Pocket Color, despite its lack of backlighting. I've been trying to play, what was it, Baseball Stars Color.
All right.
Which, because I, that was the other thing I picked up. I was playing Baseball Stars Color because I picked up, what was it called? Super Baseball 2020 on Neo Geo AES, which is another baseball game, but it's set in the future.
It's not 2020, is it?
Yeah, it is 2020, amazingly. And that, yeah, it's anyway, so it's basically, it's normal baseball, but they've sort of tweaked it. So there's like those robots in it and they've all got different stats. It's basically like baseball, like made crazy. So I was trying to play baseball on the Neo Geo Pocket Color as well, which is really, really hard. Like pitching is fine, but as soon as I get to bat, like I'm absolutely hopeless. Trying to get a home run is really difficult. But yeah, anyway, I will shut up now. That is kind of what I've been playing.
Cool. Quite a varied mix there. On yeah. Old and new consoles. Mike, what about you? What have you been doing over Christmas? I know you recently got a big haul, so maybe talk about that after you've told us about what you've been playing on current gen.
Yeah, so current gen, I picked up, I don't know if it was before the last podcast or not, but I picked up a load of modern games for Christmas, and I'm slowly trying to work through them. To be honest with you, I'm finding it a struggle, mainly because all the updates are annoying me a little bit. But also because of the fact that I bought Skyrim and I've yet again become addicted to Skyrim.
Is this the remastered edition?
It is, yeah. Although remastered is an interesting way of putting it. I can't see any difference. I've got to be honest with you. Apart from a few god effects in the lighting, I can see very, very little difference. But it's an amazing game, so I'll let it off.
I can remember when I was originally into Skyrim on the PC. It was the same with Oblivion. Like the mod scene was really good. But yeah. Also a little bit crazy for those titles. But I seem to remember a lot of the top mods were like it was like enhanced visuals in terms of like the resolution of the textures and like the density of the foliage and things.
Yeah. So obviously one of the big draws with Skyrim is that you can use mods on consoles. So I got mine on Xbox One, and there's some texture ones and there's some enhanced graphics. To be fair, the top 10 of mods I think are all naked women. which, damn. To be fair, is it's gaming. You know what I mean? It's pretty much is how it is. It hasn't changed in 20 years.
I was clearly looking in the wrong place. Naked women.
Yeah, it's just naked patches. I haven't downloaded any of them.
I actually
haven't. But I do have the inkling to do it just to see how bad it is. But so I've been playing that. That's been getting it's hooked into me again. I played a bit of Final Fantasy 15.
Yes.
I'm not a Final Fantasy fan ever before. But I got to say, I'm quite impressed with this one. It looks amazing. It plays really. I've got a friend who's a big Monster Hunter fan, and he said how bits of the game remind him of Monster Hunter a little bit. I don't like Monster Hunter, I got to say. But it seems like a genre-defining sort of genre-defying game where it's got a lot of things from different genres in it. It isn't just a sandbox clone. You know, a lot of sandbox games are sort of just GTA in a different time period.
Totally.
It's not like that.
No, not at all. I think what you say, there's definitely some truth in that. Like, I mentioned Dark Souls. Like, there's some Dark Souls in that game. Monster Hunter, I think he's right to a degree. I can definitely see that in there as well.
So I've been playing that. On the Dreamcast, I've been playing a couple of games. I've been playing Densha to Go, which is the train simulator.
nice. Densha to Go.
With the controller. Yes. Oh, Mike, you know what you should do? You should get yourself down to Southern Rail.
Yeah, probably will. oh, that's an amazing Twitter post that I've missed the opportunity to do now. But actually, it's quite good fun, actually, I got to say. I'm quite impressed with it. And I also was playing Dream Power Power, which is the Chinese bootleg.
Is that the dancing game?
Yeah, it's. I've never played a Power Power sort of game before, or whatever it's called officially. It's a bit odd. It's sort of like Euro dance music, relentlessly chirpy in the background. Hmm. And you've got to wave your arms out. There's no feet movement.
Oh, have you got the controller as
yeah,
well?
Yeah, I got
the laser beam controller.
Which is the actual build quality is amazing. It's really, really, really good build quality for what is basically a Chinese ripoff. But it plays, funnily enough, it actually isn't that bad. I've been playing a lot of the sort of games that require controllers. I've been playing Dance Dance Revolution a few months ago and the other one using Popper Music with a Popper Music controller. And It's quite good. For a bootleg game which has lots of incredibly bad translation on the box, I was quite surprised. But as you also mentioned, I did get a haul as well, so I've only got about 100 games left to go for a full collection. on Dreamcast.
Well, absolutely everything.
At least one version of everything. So I've got about 1,000 games anyway, but it's going to be sort of like this is the last 100 games, all Japanese exclusives. So I thought I'd buy the first 8. I bought a couple of ones which I really wanted. So I bought Puyo Puyo Fever, which is a game I've never had before for some unknown reason. And a couple of other ones. To be fair, they were mostly Japanese visual novels, which I'll...
Are they all kind of like dating sims and whatnot?
A couple of them are, yeah. There's a couple of things. A survival horror game. I don't want to butcher the language, but I think it's Nanotsu no Hikan. I think it's a survival horror game. Okay. And there's Gaia Master Kessen, which I think is a board game. Dogu Senki, I think is some kind of weird fantasy war simulator. I will know when I put them on. I will actually find out. I have played through all the games I've got so far, which is
that's the thing about the Japanese library. It's so vast and there's so much stuff in there that is impenetrable. It's hard to know what some of the games are.
It is,
and it's fascinating as well in the same way.
I've been playing quite a few of the visual novels because I'm currently trying to review every Dreamcast game. I'm going relatively well, but I go through all the visual novels and. A lot of them that you can sort of get by on with a bit of common sense and a bit of Google Translate and a couple of guides here and there. And do you know what? They're actually not too bad. They're not too bad. They're completely wacky, but, you know, that's what it is. I'm not quite sure why every single one seems to be set in a hospital as well. I'm not sure why. And there's always, at some point, there's this shot which you can tell in the original PC versions would have been a naked woman. But no, in a Dreamcast version, it's just this like sort of slightly dodgy side boob. And it's very odd, but it's enjoyable. Everyone's got to have a hobby, haven't they?
Everyone needs a hobby, definitely. Cool. Nice one, Mike. That's very interesting. Guys, I've actually played quite a lot and picked up quite a few different things. I'm going to quickly whiz through them so I don't bore you. The first thing that I picked up is something that I'd never actually owned when it was contemporary. Probably still is considered contemporary now, but it was a 60 gigabyte PS3, you know, the big fat ones.
How much did that sell you back?
£30.
That's a steal.
That's the one that plays the PS2 games the PS1 games. Yeah, and I've been slowly working my way through the PS2 library that I have. It's not a massive library, but I believe a lot of games aren't 100% compatible and there's a lot of weird glitches. Yeah. So I've been kind of entertaining myself looking for glitches. Some games won't run and some of them just do have like really weird graphical glitches. So it's been really cool. I mean, I've been also, you know, testing out the actual PS3 games that came with it, and there's quite a few decent ones. There's a big bundle of games came with it as well, including things like Gran Turismo 5, which is brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
MotorStorm, which is brilliant. Even Skyrim, but I've not put that on yet, and I don't think I will because I know I'll get drawn into it, so I don't want to put it on.
Yeah.
So yeah, I saw that advertised very cheaply near me and thought I need to get that because it's, you know, the one that everyone's always saying is the best one to get.
That's the great deal. I had the 60 gig originally, and I can remember choosing that one for the exact reasons. I was like, I've got all these old PS2 games and, you know, I need this backwards compatibility. It's only just over a year and that thing burnt out and I could never get another one because by that point they were so desired and I just didn't have the funds to rebuy one. So I ended up getting the non-backwards compatible 40 gig and it was never the same.
Yeah, it's been a bit of like a journey of discovery for me because the PS3 completely passed me by because all through that era I had an Xbox 360, never had a PS3. So I always just assumed that they were all PS2 and PS1 compatible. I never realized there was differences between the different models. And it's been, over the last week or so, I've been really kind of just drinking in all this information about the PS3 and the differences between the different models, and there's so many different variations. It's unreal, you know. It's been a bit of an education on the old PS3 front.
I think it's an amazing price. I think you've got yourself. I think that system's actually going to be quite unique because it's not emulating anything. I seem to recall there is literally a pared down, like a small PS2 in there. As well as the PS3. It's not like now where it's like, oh, you can play, you know, we've got, I don't know, Mass Effect 2 on the Xbox One store or on the PlayStation 4 store, and you can download and play it and it's sort of emulated, or it's like PlayStation Now where you're streaming it. Like that allowed you to, that was literally two consoles in one.
I believe in the original Japanese one, the 20 gig one, this is all information that I've picked up very recently. That's true. There is an actual emotion engine in there, but with the PAL 60 gig, it's kind of got certain chips, but not all of them.
Right.
So it's kind of doing a bit of software emulation as well. It's a bit murky what's actually going on. I know that that's true of the 20 gig version, the original Japanese one, but okay. I think the 60 gig has got some chips, but not others. So you are right, but there's other things going on.
I understand. But okay.
This isn't the PlayStation 3 junkyard, so we'll move on from that. PS4-wise, I've been playing Rise of the Tomb Raider, Witcher 3, WRC 6, Ratchet & Clank, which is brilliant, Doom, Junior Nukem 3D, the anniversary edition. Brilliant. And also one called Lifeless Planet, which has got a really good concept, but is actually crap because it's just so buggy. It's just, done my head in that one. On the Vita, I've been playing Bastion, which I finished, which was amazing. WRC 5, Skyforce Anniversary, Cinemora, which is a side-scrolling shmup. Amazing. One called Active Soccer 2DX. Another platformer called Slain. And also, our old favourite, Rob, Last Blade 2 on the Vita. Oh. Yeah, quality. On the Game Boy Advance, I've been playing a game called Phalanx, which is actually one I picked up at Play Manchester a few months ago and never really kind of played, but started playing that, and it's a rock-hard nails side-scrolling shmup again. So that's been quite awesome. Fun on the Game Boy Advance. On the Dreamcast, picked up a couple of things and been playing a couple of things that I previously owned. I played Namco Museum because I wrote an article about it on the Junkyard. It's quite nice. It's got loads of different... It's got like 8 different games on it, but there's no real extras, so I kind of didn't really like it for that reason. Especially when the PlayStation 1 collections have all got loads of extras and like a 3D museum you can actually walk around. The Dreamcast 1 doesn't have any of that. It's just really basic. Played Yu Suzuki Gameworks because, I wrote a feature on that and borrowed a copy from a friend. That's Jake from megadrive.me. Had a quick look through that. Really good conversions of the arcade classics like Outrun and Space Harrier. And what's the other one? Power Drift.
Yeah.
A couple of others. Yeah. Actual Dreamcast games. Well, they're all actual Dreamcast games, but games that I picked up are one called Fish Eyes Wild, which is a fishing game, funnily enough. And it's really interesting because you've got like these kind of weird FMV above water sections. Yeah. And then when you actually catch a fish, it kind of goes under the water and it's all 3D rendered. So it's like a weird mix of the two, like weird mix of FMV and polygonal fish. It's quite good, though. I actually prefer it to Sega Bass Fishing.
I did. I saw you put up a video of your girlfriend playing it. Was that the
one? It's just really easy and really relaxing. Like the really tranquil music. You just like cast your rod and just like reel it in, and you might get a bite. You might not.
Really peaceful graphics, I remember rightly. It's like really peaceful, sort of serene landscape.
Yeah, it is. It's really cool. It's really nice game. Yeah, it's quite. Apparently, it's quite uncommon these days as well. I didn't realize that it's quite rare, but I managed to pick it up really cheap. And the other one I got was one called Bass Rush Dream, which is another fishing game, which I haven't actually played yet, but is more in the line of Sega Bass Fishing. I mean, I'm planning on doing like a look at all the different fishing games on the Dreamcast, so that's predominantly the reason why I picked those two.
Bass Rush Dream is a good game as well, probably the best of the fishing
games. Is it? Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. I'll look forward to having a go on that then and getting this article and knocked together. Anyway, yeah, that's what I've been doing on the Dreamcast and otherwise. There are a couple of other games I've played, but we'll talk about them in due course as we go through the topics on our little list. But first of all, we'll have a little break and we'll be back after this. Welcome back. You are listening to episode 45 of the Dreamcast Junkyard Dream Pod. It's the first one of 2017, which won't mean anything to you if you're listening to this in 2018 or even beyond, you know. You never know. Guys, news. Let's jump straight in.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff happening. A lot of stuff happening on the Dreamcast recently. It's just like, you know, it's like 2016 all over again. But, you know, with new news, obviously. First thing is that our old friend Stormwind has been re-released, which is awesome news. If people haven't played it before, now is the perfect time to get it because it's, you don't have to go on eBay anymore and pay through the nose for a £100 copy of Stormwind.
Get ripped off, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. You can go to either the BitStation, you can go to Dragonbox, or you can go to Retro Players if you're in the UK, and pick up a copy for between £35 and £40 or dollars or euros, whichever one is your denomination. Guys, this is amazing news. I mean, obviously, we've all played Stormwind.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you. The only version I had before now was a copy. And so this is perfect for me because I'd never had the proper version. So I've obviously bought a copy. I mean, I love it. I love Stormwind. I think it's brilliant. What do you guys think?
Yeah, Stormwind looks it looks amazing, and it's great that it looks amazing. It plays amazing. It is amazing, and it's really great that they're re-releasing it. The thing I would say though is that I'm still actually going to be waiting a little longer because I really want the Kraken.
Yes, that's what I want.
Like, for me, that's the deal maker. Like, yeah. Every time I played Stormwind, I've had an absolute blast. But I think the thing that will tip me over the edge is that Kraken plushie. And as you've said, Tom, like, even just standard copies of the game on eBay have been going for quite silly money. And as soon as any of those Kraken editions pop up, it's been outrageous money. Yeah. So the sooner the better.
Yeah, and for those people listening who are wondering what we're talking about, the Kraken is like a little, it's almost like Cthulhu.
It's Cthulhu. It's like baby Cthulhu, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, and they were given away with the special edition of the game way back in 2013. But the BitStation over in the US, who are one of the retailers who are selling this new re-release, have managed to secure a load of new old stock of the Kraken, and they will be releasing it as it's called the Throwback Edition. There's no information on their website as yet, but I've spoken to them quite extensively over email, and they've told me that's what they're doing, so that's why I put that story up on the Dreamcast Junkyard. So yeah, look out for that coming in the next couple of weeks. I believe it'll be on sale like sort of the end of January, beginning of February, so I'm told. So yeah, look out
for
that.
If I worked there, then I think when all the orders went out, I would have to go, release the Kraken.
Most definitely. Another bit of news. Well, this is going to be quite a news-heavy episode, I think, because it's all going on at the moment. The guys who make the Hanzo are also making a new HDMI to VGA box. Now, before I go into this, I just want to clarify a few things, right? I make the occasional YouTube video, and I occasionally put Dreamcast footage into my videos. And every time I do this, I always get a comment from somebody saying, why have you used a composite cable? Why don't you use VGA? Right, the reason for that is because it's so goddamn complicated. I have tried so many different combinations of box, cable, converter, and it never works. And when I put these questions up on the Facebook group, somebody else chimes in, and then somebody else chimes in, and it's so much conflicting information. I've never managed to get a VGA signal out of a Dreamcast into a recording device and for it to work, right? So for someone like me, this looks like a perfect thing to own. And basically what it is it's called the Akura, and it's a little box that you plug into the back of the Dreamcast. It doesn't require its own power source. You basically plug it into where the AV out goes, and then you plug a HDMI cable into the box and then plug that into a HDTV, and it does all the work for you. It puts a nice, crisp image on the screen.
Yeah.
For someone like me who is sick to death of trying to get a decent VGA signal out of a Dreamcast and put it into, like, for example, a capture device, this is something that I would purchase just because I want to see if it gives me an option of, you know, recording a really good quality image.
For
sure. I don't know about you guys. What do you guys think?
I'm currently used to using a standard VGA, and I definitely want to get a capture device at some point just for writing articles, to be honest with you. So again, I'm not tech knowledgeable at all. So for me, it seems quite an easy solution. I'm sure there'll be something in the way which makes it difficult, but it sounds quite good.
That's the point. Sorry, Rob. I think that's the main selling point of this device. It's not for the person who's like really hardcore into all these converters and whatnot. I mean, I'm the same as you, Mike. I would literally love to just be able to plug something in at work, and that's why it appeals to me. You know, there's no messing around with signal converters and different power supplies and that kind of thing. You just plug it in and it works. Sorry, Rob, you're going to say something?
No, I agree with everything that was said. What I would say is that for me, I mean, it appeals to me. Like, I'm the same to a degree. Like, I'm lucky that the TV that, like, when we do the events, Tom, and we go to play Manchester, I bring up my television, which has a VGA out at the back, and I don't have your issue where I need to record anything. So I literally go from my modded Dreamcast, which has an internal VGA box, just literally VGA straight into the back of the TV, VGA, and the picture's really good. What I would say, though, this does appeal to me, though, because the Dreamcast is a bit odd, really, in the consoles that I own, in that it's one of the few that I can't route through my XRGB mini upscaler One of the things that it won't take is VGA. But if I can convert VGA to HDMI, I can then run HDMI, have a HDMI pass-through through the upscaler, and then I can get even more picture options through that upscaler. So it does still appeal to me. And also, it would help me use it with other televisions as well that don't have a VGA in.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong, I've got a VGA monitor, a proper old-school CRT PC monitor that takes a VGA signal, and I've got a HD TV that takes VGA. It's just, yeah, for me, it's the recording thing that is the issue. It's all to do with, like, you know, the different size, the different resolution of the screen and all that kind of thing. And it's just, it's an absolute, it's a minefield, you know, because people have got different setups, and I appreciate people trying to give advice and stuff on the internet, but there's so many different variables that, you know, something's going to go wrong, and it always invariably does for me, because that's just generally what happens. It just generally go wrong. So this box, I mean, it's from the guys, they're called Bihar Bros. They created the Toro and the Kuro. I know Caleb's got, is it a Kuro, I think he's got? Is it one of the two? It's one of the Toro, is it the Toro, yeah, or the Kuro? And it's also a scanline generator as well, so it makes it look like it's on an old-school CRT.
Yeah, yeah.
And the footage they've put up on the YouTube channel and on the Assembler Games forum thread that they've got going, it looks really good, you know. It looks really nice. So, yeah, be looking forward to that when it comes out. I think they're going to put pre-orders live middle of January, probably around the time this goes out, maybe just a little bit after. But if you want any more information, if you just go on the Dreamcast Junkyard, and on the right hand side you'll see You May Have Missed. I'll keep it up there for when this, yeah, episode goes out. Just a big sign that says Akura, click on that and you'll see all the information. But yeah, that looks like something worth waiting
and that's
for.
The thing, all those units that they've made, they got great build quality as well, so you know, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that you can pick up very cheap, but I think Caleb always swears by it, doesn't he? And everything I've heard has been people saying good things. So
yeah, they also have a lifetime guarantee as well. So if anything breaks, which is obviously not very often, they replace it. I mean, it seems the stuff that they put out previously, I've heard nothing but good things about. So can't see why this will be any different. Let's move on to the next topic of discussion, and this time we're moving away from hardware. We're talking about games, specifically open source games, potentially coming to the Dreamcast. Guys, if I say the word postal to you, don't think about posting a letter. PC games, postal. It's a game from the early 90s. Did you play it, Rob?
Yeah, I did. What? The dark days. Dark days. I won't waffle because I know I have a tendency to do so, but...
Please feel free. Feel free,
postal.
Rob.
Postal. Wasn't a good game.
It was
let's
not.
Get that.
It
let's get
not.
Off.
No.
Yeah.
Thank God, like, someone said it.
Well, I tried to be very diplomatic in the article. I didn't want to say Postal's coming, maybe coming to Dreamcast, and it's shit.
Well, no,
so I didn't want to say that.
Hang on. It wasn't a bad. I'm glad that we're all in agreement. It was not a good game.
Got to be honest. Never played it. Hold my hand up. Never played it. I didn't have a PC
well,
back then.
Yeah,
so.
And this is quite obscure. Like, it's only because at the time, literally at the time of Postal, I was sort of in my mental PC phase, yeah, where I was incredibly into that scene, that I had any, that I, today, I have any idea what Postal was. I think, though, looking back, like, there is something about it. Like, it's a bad game, but there's something, it would never be made now. It's sort of, it's a game that I can understand what the, I don't know, maybe I should describe it first. So, if you haven't played Postal, you play this guy who just wakes up one day and essentially goes postal, and in that sense of the word, and you just gun down and horribly kill a load of people, like burn the police station down and various other locales. There's a school as well, but you can't touch the school, I think, and the local village, and just.
I think you could touch a school in the first one, couldn't you? I think wasn't that one of the major issues, that you could do the school? Then obviously the whole Columbine thing came out, and it sort of went a bit mental.
Oh, maybe the version I played then, maybe they changed it. I'm not an expert. Maybe they changed it after that massacre.
It was a long time ago.
I remember the weapons not working for me. But anyway, yeah, so it's a horrible game, really, because essentially you eventually get taken in or taken down, and then at the end of the game it's like, well, he went mad and killed all these people, and now he's in a mental asylum, and the game sort of ends like that.
For those people who are listening who've never seen it, it's kind of played from like an isometric view, isn't it?
If you've played Hotline Miami, that's like, I always think Hotline Miami is influenced to a degree by Postal. Hotline Miami is very fast, and it's purely top-down. Postal is a lot slower than Hotline Miami, and it's not top down, it's more of an isometric viewpoint, and it's got these sort of weird, I don't know how you describe them. Do you know, like, old-fashioned RPGs have, like, hand-drawn backgrounds, like Neverwinter Nights, Icewind Dale, Baldur's Gate, the original Fallout games?
Yeah.
And then you had sprites moving around on top of that artwork.
It's quite similar to Syndicate, isn't it? That sort of, sort of thing.
Can we throw Crusader and Nolan Martin as well?
If you want to.
I don't know. I think if you were to put it back in front of me now, I'd play it for 5 to 10 minutes and I'd be like, oh yeah, like some of these hand-drawn backgrounds were quite nice, and boy, like these guys were kind of a bit crazy to put this together, and it's very dark and grim, and then after about 10 minutes I get bored and move on.
Yeah. I think that the thing that kind of is why we're talking about though is that the developer Running With Scissors decided on the 20th anniversary, or near as damn it 20th anniversary of the game, decided to make the source code open source. So anyone is now free to download it. And one of the things they said on Twitter was, and on their website was, we're making the game open source. Here's the code. All we ask is that somebody put it on the Dreamcast. And obviously I was just like, what? You know, and I thought, oh, that'd make a good story. And give it a bit of publicity. And since then, a couple of indie developers have come out and said, yo, we'd like to work on this. And various other people have said, oh, yeah, we can do this. And I believe one of those people is Coraline from...
Oh, really?
From... Isotope Softworks, you know, you never know, you know.
Look, I've just gone and sort of badmouth the game. On the flip side, as I've said, there is something about that title, though. I can kind of understand its attraction from one point of view, because it does have a very distinct look. And a lot of people do remember it because it was such this. It was sort of like a dark, incredibly dark. Like today, like in Grand Theft Auto, you can do horrible, horrible things, gun people down, run them over, throw Molotov cocktails and set people alight and stuff. But there's something very cartoony about it. I think the reason why at the time Postal was so vilified was because there was something grittily realistic in its very limited visuals.
Wasn't there one recently called Hatred, which was kind of like the same, it wasn't well received as a game in general, not just because of the content, but it was kind of, it was like an even darker version of Postal. Do you know what I mean?
I think I know what you mean in terms of the game, but it's been for the last 20 years, every couple of years, there's been a game surfacing like it, isn't there? Which tries to sort of court controversy and get publicity from that way rather than actually spend their time making a game, which is good.
Yeah.
Which is the same as I was saying, the same as Rob, but back in, you know, when it came out, I remember it was a big PC game at the time and everyone was talking about it. Expensive games that are really good because of the fact it was making front page news, probably in the Daily Mail. I played a game, I probably played it shareware. It might have been shareware in some way or whatever I played it as. And as Rob says, it's not a great game, but saying that, you know, there's no reason why if someone ports the game to a Dreamcast, they can't tweak it a little bit and make it a more interesting title.
I'd definitely play it. I mean, you know, if somebody brought it to it's a new Dreamcast game, you know, I'm going to, you know, take some interest. So
make one of the targets Sony HQ.
you can't say that.
That's what we do, right? Sony HQ, burn it down, put Dreamcast swirls on the floor in blood. The game's made. I'll buy it.
Speaking of taking down Sony, let's move on to our next topic. DC Jam 2016. Do you remember this? I put an article up about it on the Dreamcast Junkyard last year because a group of sort of homebrew indie coders decided to come up with this game jam idea. You know, let's make Dreamcast games and make a game jam for Dreamcast, and it's called DC Jam. Funnily enough, this is the last week that it runs. I think it ends on like the 5th of January, and only the first game has been submitted, and it's a game called Dreamcast Noid, which is a game by a guy called Alfonso Martinez, who has created this Arkanoid clone in which you control a little VMU that moves along the bottom of the screen like a paddle, and you can destroy PlayStation 2 related blocks at the top of the screen.
Love it.
I downloaded it, put it on a disc, you know, using alcohol 120%, and it's really good fun. Yeah, it's just a basic Arkanoid clone, and I just thought it was really good fun. It's got, you know, music, you've got different cheats, one of which is where you can turn the balls into like these massive Dreamcast worlds, which
demolish,
completely destroy the whole screen. I mean, this guy, he's the guy who's creating the, it's like a visual novel called Project Bennu. And he just knocked this up, I believe, in a week over the Christmas period and then sent me a link over Christmas. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool that he did that in such a short amount of time. And yeah, it's obviously, it's not all done by him. There's a couple of other people. One guy did the music, one guy did the intro scenes and stuff like that. So it's well worth checking out. So that's a Dreamcast Noid. That's free to download. I put links and everything in the show notes and on the Dreamcast Junkyard. But there's also an article up already about that. I did skip over one subject we're going to talk about next because I just wanted to tie that in with Mike's anti-Sony outburst at the end of the postal section.
Representing Dreamcast. That's what it is, Tom. Never forgive them. Never forgive.
there's me with my PS3 and my PS4 and my Vita all around me at the moment.
I've got a PS4. I've got a PS4 next to me as it is, so you know I'm not presenting that well.
Yeah, so another game that's now back online through the hard work of people far cleverer than I is Worms World Party. This actually only happened this week. And I found out this news on DreamcastLive.net, which is a fellow Dreamcast fan site. But it's run by our good friend PC Wizard. It's all to do with like online gaming and the efforts to get the Dreamcast back online. And they're doing a sterling job, I must say, because Worms World Party is now back online. Got to be honest, I was never a fan of the Worms series. And I never played any of them online back in the day. Did you guys play Worms at all?
Many times, yes.
Yeah. See, every time I'm like, oh, I never played this. And then you two are like, oh, yeah.
Do you want to go first, Mike?
So Worms itself, obviously I've played Worms for years. But yeah.
Was that on the Amiga?
No, I never had an Amiga. PC, actually, yeah. Back in probably, late 90s, I think. I think I played Worms on online. Probably would have been... I don't know if the World Party came out on a PC, if that was the first online on all platforms, but...
I think it did come out on a PC,
I probably played it on that. And obviously on the 360. For some reason, when I had my 360, I was massively into playing Worms online. Played it a lot of times. It's a great game. It's a classic. It's one of those classic puzzlers, which, you know, you can never get too much Worms. Well...
obviously, I'm gonna rephrase that, Mike.
it depends where the Worms are, but... it's a classic game.
I will talk about Worms for sure. Let's go for it. Yeah, like, I love Worms. Like, I played the original Worms and Worms 2 on PC. Worms Armageddon as well. Worms Armageddon. Some people say Worms Armageddon is the best Worms game. And I think probably bang for buck it is, like, because it's got the most insane weaponry in it. Mm. It's not balanced, though, is the problem, Worms Armageddon. And then there's Worms World Party, which is essentially a repackaged version of Armageddon, sort of toned down a little bit and balanced. I think Worms 2 or Worms World Party are probably the two best Worms games they ever made. Because after that, they all went 3D and the 3D ones were abysmal. Yeah. I haven't played any... of the recent 2D fair I sort of finished after Worms World Party, but Worms World Party is a cracking game. Like, I don't know what there isn't to like about Worms. I thought, always felt it was a very British game as well.
Yeah,
definitely. I mean, Team 17 are a British developer, aren't they? So.
Well, they are for sure. I mean, one of the original guys, I mean, he used to have an internet cafe down in Bournemouth, I think. Like, he
really?
Yeah, I think so. Oh. I think that, unless that's some sort of like local legend or something.
Oh, do you want to hear a local legend about Bournemouth? A guy from Team 17 used to have an internet cafe down here. Don't tell anyone.
It's a big secret. No, I think he played loads. I think there was like loads of Worms LAN parties when LAN parties were a thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I can remember doing a LAN party. I can remember literally one time having a rucksack and carrying my computer in a rucksack on my back with all of its peripherals and then carrying a 14 or 15 inch monitor in my hands along with a, like, what was they called? Like a four splitter LAN box. To my mate's house so we could LAN up. Like, that never happens anymore. Anyway, sorry. Yeah, Worms is great. I think the port, I've got the port on the Dreamcast as well. I think it's a good port as well. And this is great that people can now play online.
Yes.
Yeah, I could never get on with it. I mean, I've only ever played it in single player because I could never actually get anyone to come and play.
That's the problem.
Worms basically was infuriating if you tried to play the computer because the computer basically had two modes of operation. One, it would blow itself to oblivion and you may as well not even input any commands. Or two, it was like each worm was like the Terminator and had like laser guided vision. They could pull off shots into the wind, amazing physics where they bend rockets into gaps from the other side of the screen. And you just like, you'd be like, this is so unfair. It's like controller, you know, rage quit time. But as soon as you started playing against, it's one of the best games. Now I remember it was one of the most amazing games to play with friends and even family, because it had a sort of, it's cartoony nature, sort of contrasted really well with the extreme violence. Like, some of the weapons were amazing, and now I kind of cast my mind back. Like, the concrete donkey, who, I mean, come on. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing.
Just the sound of it sounds amazing.
Not, the concrete donkey, Tom, right? Imagine, so this is a super special weapon. As soon as you activate the concrete donkey, you hear a plane noise go overhead, and then suddenly out of the sky, this massive, monolithic concrete donkey drops and then hits the landscape, and then like an earthquake going off. It keeps bouncing up and down as if it's on a bouncy castle, but every time it bounces, it destroys the ground underneath it and sends any worms that are remotely close to it flying. Like, it was ridiculously overpowered, like crazy. There's some classic, like, that's not even the funniest. Like, there was an old lady, I forget what it was called, you literally unleashed a granny. And she had little spectacles and an umbrella or a walking stick, and she'd go, "Oh, dearie, dearie," and she'd sort of hobble round very slowly in a straight line. But when she exploded, she'd literally like take a massive crater out of the landscape.
Oh yeah,
when she exploded, of course. And there was the holy hand grenade as well, which was obviously ripped from Monty Python. It literally was the holy hand grenade from Monty Python, and you throw it, and it would go ding, 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 and then it would have the like the hallelujah choir chorus, and to go, and then it'd explode, and it would literally just demolish everything around it. It was so fun.
That sounds really cool, actually. Maybe I should go back and give it another go. I did play it on the Atari Jaguar at an event, because the Jag version apparently was complete and never came out or something. So you can actually get it, but it's not official or something like that.
Which edition was this?
That's just the original Worms, the first one, yeah. But no online play, obviously, on the good old Jag. So, yeah, Worms is back online, Worms World Party. Like I say, go and check out dreamcastlive.net for all the information on Worms World Party, and also some really handy connection guides on how to get back online with your Dreamcast. Some of them are quite in-depth, but there are others which are quite easy. You know what you're doing with a good old Dream Pi, Raspberry Pi setup. I've not personally tried it, but I intend to in the near future. Okay, guys, we're coming to the end now, but before we do get to the end, I wanted to bring, well, not just you two, but everybody listening to this, your attention to the Kickstarter for a new game called In the Line of Fire. We've covered this on the Dreamcast Junkyard multiple times, and it's nearing the end of its Kickstarter run now, and I've got to be honest, I don't think it's going to make its target, but I think if we all kind of just go and have a look at it and maybe see if we can pledge a couple of pounds or dollars, we might get there, you know. Full disclosure, I have nothing to do with the game. I just think it looks really cool, and I think it would be really good to have a new first-person shooter on the Dreamcast, especially a tactical squad-based shooter, which could right the wrongs that the Rainbow Six series set in motion with its terrible frame rate and appalling graphics. We'll get the tactical shooter that we all deserved. But it won't happen unless we actually get behind the guys creating the game, which is Militia Studios, and, you know, pledge what you can. It does look like a really fantastic game. I don't know what you guys think.
It looks really good, yeah. I think it's the level of the control as well. Like, you mentioned Rainbow Six. It looks like, what, as you've said, you've taken the words out of my mouth. It looks like what the Rainbow Six should have been.
I mean, like I say, we've only got the single level demo at the moment, but I played it, you know, it's a bit, that version was a bit janky because it was a very early build. But with the amount of options and, you know, extra modes they're going to put into the game, it just looks like something that, if it doesn't get funded, it just looks like such a massive waste. You know what I mean? There's this game here that is begging to be funded, and the Dreamcast community just needs to kind of, you know, get behind it, and I don't know.
I think the problem is, Tom, is that it's not even Kickstarter. I think a guy on the Dreamcast Junkyard and most of the Dreamcast communities on Facebook put a post up saying there's 28 games in development for Dreamcast.
That's right,
Which is phenomenal amount of games. If you think about how many, you know, some consoles don't have that many in their entire lifetime. We're talking about a console which has been dead for 17 years, and there's 28 games being made for it. I think you know, I know personally, I've got, I think, three games I've got that haven't come yet I've bought. So obviously, they pre-orders.
Yes, I
think there's more than that. I think like six or seven games in total, which are people have pledged for to come out. I think we're reaching critical mass a little bit, and I think there needs to be... I know it's I don't know why a lot of these guys don't work together and make just sort of one publishing... One publishing unit, as it were. I know they've had problems in the past, obviously, with Red Spot Games and other ones, which haven't necessarily had the best of end results. But if all these indie guys came together and just sort of decided to try and pool some of their resources, there could be a regular outpouring of games, and we wouldn't have these Kickstarter stretches constantly, because the money generated from one could then go... You know what I mean? Maybe I'm living in fancy land. But...
Yeah, it's very... No, I totally agree. No, I mean, I think what you're saying is that it's very fractured. And when you put it like that, I kind of agree, because you're just bringing what you just said there kind of brought back to my memory that I've paid for Slave, I've paid for Alice Dreams Tournament, I've paid for umpteen other games that I've still not seen anything of. And yeah, I mean, this is no disrespect to the guys making Inline of Fire, because it does look like a phenomenal game, I must say.
Totally.
But I just think, yeah, when you put it like that, there's just a lot of apathy around the Dreamcast community about, oh, we're making a new game, and you're like,
I think we are quite a small team. Although there's quite a few, there's not that many of us really. There's probably what, 1,000 people at most who are like sort of really heavily active in stuff now. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But even though we've got 3,000 people in our group, in our page.
Yeah. I mean, you've got massive. There are a couple of massive Facebook groups. I think the only one that's bigger than ours at the moment is Dreamcast Brazil, which is humongous. But I mean, I don't really go in there because I can't speak Spanish, and a lot of the posts are actually
Portuguese.
Sorry, I apologize. Portuguese. I should know that. Oh, one of my friends at school was Brazilian.
We'll get letters.
And he spoke Portuguese.
We'll get letters, Tom.
I apologize to the nation of Brazil and also to the nation of Portugal. I apologize. However, on this subject, a new game did actually come out. Well, I was made aware of it today for the Dreamcast. And that game is called, when I can find it. I had it up a second ago. What am I doing? Look for the Dreamcast. I'm going to leave this in, by the way. Extremely professional.
Yeah.
We all are here at the Dreamcast.
Yeah.
Here we go. It's called Matter Run.
Oh, yes.
It's a space-based shoot 'em up. Well, it's not shoot 'em up. It's more of a puzzle game, I believe. I've not actually downloaded it and tried it yet, but I will do.
It's a game of some kind, isn't it? Some kind of, like, I don't know, like Pong.
No, basically, what you have to do is you control this little spaceship and you have to collect the canisters and put them into this, like, waste disposal thing. But as well as that, there's another ship that's trying to get them so that you can build a mother ship that will come and kill you.
Cool.
It, like Sinistar does.
Yeah.
So you have to get them all before the enemy does and builds this, like, indestructible mother ship that will come and kill you. So, it's like a high score kind of game, you've got to get yourself a high score. But yeah, if you go to the actual URL is really long, so I don't really want to read it out on here, but if you search for Matter Run, that's MATTERRUN, Matter Run, or just do a search for Fuseki Games, that's FUSEKI Fuseki Games. I will put links as usual in the description on the Junkyard for this podcast. But it's free to download, and you can burn it to a CDI or a CDR even. It's a CDI image. Burn it with alcohol and 120%.
Don't burn it to a CDI. Don't burn it to a CDI. We don't want that. Burn a CDI maybe, but don't burn it to a CDI.
I'll have less said about a CDI, thank you. I quite like that system. As I do with every failed system, I've got a bit of a soft spot for that.
To be fair, if you try and put it on the CDI, probably better than Zelda games were on the CDI. So.
Good point, to be honest. Very good point. that's the Kickstarter for In the Line of Fire, and also the new game Matter Run. And I think that will do it for us on this return after the festive break, gentlemen. Unless there's anything else that either of you would like to discuss or touch on.
I'm good. It's been a pleasure.
It's always a pleasure, Rob. Always a pleasure. Yeah. So, okay. If we've got nothing else to talk about, then we will draw this one to a close. Guys, it's been a pleasure again, as I say. Thank you very much for joining me. We can all be found on various social media. Rob, you can be found on Twitter at
rnicholasj.
Excellent. And Mike, you can be found on Twitter at
space_turnip.
Space_turnip. I can be found at Tom Lee C. We can all be found collectively at the DC Junkyard, and on Facebook at facebook.com/thedreamcastjunkyard, and also groups. If you go to the Facebook page and scroll down a little bit on the right-hand side, you'll see a little tab for groups. Click on that and it'll take you to our group. And yeah, you have to be approved to join it because we had loads of spam bot things joining. So.
And Sony fans.
Well, yeah. Mate, I've got a Sony jumper on in my Facebook picture, so...
yeah, but Tom, we don't, you know, you're allowed to. You're allowed to. Because you're a Jaguar fan as well, so it's, you know, your choice is taste is poor.
Well, it was either the Sony PlayStation jumper or the Jaguar tattoo across my chest, so I didn't know which one to go
for. Oh, that would be amazing.
Anyway, that'll do it for episode 45 of the Junkyard Dream Pod. Thank you very much for listening. We will see you on the next one. It's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye!
We got there in the end. Very good. Uncued. But yeah, see you on the next one, guys. Thank you. Bye.
Please stop this disc now.